Okay.
We ready? So, of course, the power quiz I would estimate was probably about an inch deep or thereabouts. And by the end of that day, my brand new shoes, is it okay? My brand new shoes were coming apart the very first day. So I had to get string and some heavy cardboard and tie it around my shoes and take the four trains back to my aunt's place. It was about a 2-hour trip, strapping in the underground. And walk about 6 blocks with practically no shoes on, you know. And, of course, I didn't have an extra pair of shoes, so my cousin had feet about the same size as mine, and they lent me some old shoes. And so, I put up with that place as being a general flunky for about a month. I caught a very bad cold and so on, and I was always a bit chesty and so on, and I was just coughing and wheezing, and I was in a very sad shape. So my father called up my aunt and said, "How's Roy doing?" And she said, "Well, he's not looking good." So anyway, my father said, "Well, I want to quit that job." So then there was business about, well, I'll get drafted. So I went back down from London to Bournemouth, and I believe it was about 2 weeks, during the course of which my father, there was a big place out there east of Bournemouth, a place called Summerford, near a little old town called Christchurch. There's a beautiful priory there, just east of there, a place called Summerford, which had a place called Signals Research and Development Establishment, or SRDE. My father went out there and talked to the head man there and explained the situation. He said, "Oh yes, well, I understand, sure." So I got a job there. And I went out there, and it's literally nothing for me to do, kind of what I call a typical government job, and people being laid off all the time, but to hire them anyway. So I was sitting there just trying to keep my organic chemistry up to date and, you know, what I knew at that time. And I was doing a little bit of chemistry, but it was in a mycology lab. They were growing all kinds of fungus, some huge fungi, in tropical desert conditions and also tropical jungle conditions. They had these great walking hot closets. They were much fearsome looking fungi you've ever seen. And they were doing a little bit of chemistry on these things. And I reported to a person called Captain Portsmouth. Very, very nice person. He used to come in with his army uniform on and so on. But it was on one of those days, I heard this high piping, trilling voice coming down the corridor, and another fellow from the next lab came in to me and said, "There's a professor coming down the hall. Would you like to talk to him?" I said, "Well, what am I going to talk to him about?" So he said, "Well, you know, you might be able to go part-time to University College Southampton, which is 30 miles from Bournemouth. So, you know, one day a week. So would you like to talk to him?" I said, "Yes." So I said, so it's pretty soon that the head of the SRD came in on with Professor Neil Kensington Adam in tow, and he talked to me, because along with myself at SRD, there were quite a few other big boys being caught in this socialist trap. They were qualified to go to various universities, but Ellen Wilkinson said, "You can't do it." So anyway, the net result was I talked to Professor Adam, and he said, "Would you like to come up there one day a week?" So they will give me off, with pay, one day a week off to go to university. So I rode on the back of a truck, an army truck. I had to be downtown Bournemouth. I rode my bike 3 miles downtown, parked behind a hotel, I should say, and catch this army truck, and then we had this long, tortuous way all the way through the New Forest. Even though it was a direct line, it was only 30 miles, we took probably 45 miles getting there, sort of picking up these various people. They would drop us outside the main library, and there we were for the day. And we had to report back there at 5 o'clock on the way, we're out of luck. So I went in there and introduced myself to one of the lecturers at University College Southampton. By the way, I should explain that University College Southampton was then an outpost of the University of London, awarding London degrees, rather like the University of California, Santa Barbara or Santa Cruz, or, you know, things like that. But it was very small. The total student population at that time was only 950 people. And the chemistry department was only about six lecturers. It was a very small, cozy place. And I remember meeting Isabel Grace McNaughton Campbell, a very nice lady. I guess she was about 50 at the time. And she said, would you like to make some nitrobenzene for me? So I said, yes, I'd love to. So I made her, oh, I suppose, a couple of liters of nitrobenzene. And the biggest equipment I ever worked in, which before that was working very small flask and so on. And she was very, very pleased with that. And I made her some dinitrobenzene as a byproduct and so on. And I did that for about, roughly about a year. I'm sort of digging around my memory here. And let's see. Oh, and then after about, no, it wasn't quite a year. It was about 9 months later. There was a massive layoff. So out I went again along with everybody else. With these post-war cutbacks, everybody out, you know, good, bad, different supervisors, lucky's, everybody was out. So here I was on the market again for more call-up. So I thought, okay, how long is this going to last? So about a week later, of course, the government was very, very hot to call for people up. So I got another letter from the government saying, well, you know, you've got to report for another 2 years. So I thought, well, now, there's nothing going on around Bournemouth. I mean, Bournemouth is a resort town, no industry at all. And so I wrote a letter to Mr. Thorne at Poole Gas Works. They had gasifying coal. In those days, we used a lot of coal gas. So he wrote back next day, because in those days the post office was very, very efficient, still is, and we used to have, still do have two deliveries a day. So the very next day I got, or 2 days later, I got this nice letter back saying, I'm sorry, we turned up to hire, but we didn't know she wrote me. So I go, all right. So my father said, look, son, don't take what they say, things like that, you know, don't take no for an answer. Shave and put on your best clothes and get on your bike and cycle out and talk to Mr. Thorne. So I did, and went down. That was about 8 miles over three ranges of hills, and I put down what they call Constitution Hill. It's called Constitution Hill because you have to have a good constitution to be able to climb that damn thing. Anyway, I freewheeled down there in the pool and went to see Mr. Thorne, and he said, no, we really don't, but have you tried the Gas Research Board? I said, I've never even heard of the Gas Research Board. So the Gas Research Board is kind of like an ESSA, what would you call it, Stanford Research Institute for the coal gas industry at the time. British Gas Council, as they called themselves. And I said, well, where is it? He said, well, you see that building over there? It was about perhaps 90 feet away. That's the Gas Research Board. So I went in there and I met this very nice young lady. She seemed old to me at the time. She was about 26. She said, oh, hello, would you like a cup of tea? I said, yes, I would, please, thank you. And Dr. Moynard is in the other building. He'll be in with you in a few minutes. I'd never heard of Dr. Moynard. Anyway, came in, and here was this gentleman dressed in beige-colored dungarees, you know what they are, they're, you know, overalls. And he had this beautiful Oxford accent, a real crack-jaw accent. And I introduced myself to him, and I explained the situation, and so on. He said, yes, I think we can use you. And I explained that I was pretty good at chemistry and so on, and he gave me a job. And so I was doing gas analysis of a giant instrument called the Bonum-Wheeler machine. We grew to hate that machine, but it was one of these things where you pass the gases over copper oxide, and you absorb the carbon monoxide and the CO2, and we were sopping around buckets of mercury. You talk about politically incorrect. Nobody wore any gloves in those days. Didn't even wear eye shields. And I did that for about a year. And also I crushed colite and sieved that. Because I was supposed to be at Oxford at the time, please know. And of course, during that course of that time, naturally, my scholarships collapsed and so on. But I did decide I would try to take chemistry at the local college. Now I should explain that in order to get a degree, there are two types of London degrees. Either internal, where you go to the University of London in London, or external degrees, which are actually slightly harder because, you know, you had to prove yourself to the University of London, which is every bit as good as Oxford or Cambridge, but it doesn't have quite the aura. It's not like Harvard and Yale have that aura, you know. It's kind of like Princeton would be or something like that. Anyway, I went to a local college and I decided I'd minor in physics. Now, for a degree, I was going to major in chemistry with a minor in physics. There's two, in those days, there were two types of degrees you could take. Either the Bachelor of Science General, which was three subjects at the same level, or the special degree, which is one subject at the very advanced level, and the subsidiary part of that was at the general level. So I thought, well, I'll take physics. Well, we had this very antiquated physics department at Municipal College in Bournemouth. And I managed to electrocute myself a couple of times. I thought, you know, it took about an hour to set up, and almost an hour to disassemble, and hardly any time left to do any experiments. So I thought, this is no good. So I thought, well, I think what I'll do, this antiquated equipment, half it didn't work, it was missing, I wasn't getting anywhere with it. So I thought, I'll take calculus instead. I can do this at home, on my own, you know, little coffee table there, I can work in my bedroom or something like that. I can do it on my own, and I'll take calculus instead. So I minored in field mathematics. So I put in 3 years of what I call my period of indentured slavery. And I was going to Southampton one day a week, and Gas Research Board would allow me another day off, 2 days, provided I would come in on Saturdays and work the whole Saturday, because they would give up a day and a half off. So I would go to Gas Research Board on Monday, Southampton on Tuesday, Gas Research Board on Wednesday, Pure Mathematics at Home on Thursday, and Friday and Saturday, Gas Research Board. I only had Sunday off. And that's what I did for 2 years. So then I asked Professor Adam at Southampton, I said, look, I've done my 2 years of slavery here now, is it possible I could come to Southampton? I should have gone to Oxford, and that's gone. So he said, yes, why don't you apply to registrar for a further education and training grant, which is kind of like the GI Bill in his version thereof. So I said, okay, I went to the registrar, filled out the forms, and about several weeks, I don't remember how many, 3 or 4 weeks later, I got this letter back saying, I'm sorry, but we just continued that program about 6 months ago. Oh, by the way, why didn't you apply 2 years ago? Because we rescinded. Now get this, we rescinded, this is socialism for you. We rescinded the 3 year requirement back to 1 year, which meant I could have gone to Oxford 2 years previously. So they screwed me out of Oxford, and then I'm trying to find my language. I feel very adamant about this. Screwed me out of a government grant too. So my father appealed to Lord Lionel Festival, and he was our local member of parliament. And it was brought up in the House of Parliament, and of course lots of other people all over England were being treated the same way. So they graciously, the socialists graciously reinstated it. Now at that time I graduated at £5 a week. £5 a week. That is nowadays buying 5 cups of coffee. At Gas Research Board, and I got a grant of £4.10, which is £4.5 a week, to go to Southampton full time. So I went up there full time, started in October 1948, and in November 48, I took the, In November 48, I took the subsidiary exam in pure mathematics, had to go up to the University of London. I remember sitting there at the what they call the Examination Hall, Imperial Institute Road, South Kensington, London. A truly fearsome place, Victorian architecture. And I was ushered in this huge room, and I was surrounded by nuns. I mean, not the next desk, the next desk but one. So no cheating now. And the invigilator, do you have that word over here, invigilator? In other words, the guard, or the monitor, whatever you call him, parading up and down here, making sure that nobody looked at anybody else's paper, and I didn't want to look at those people's paper anyway. Anyway, I got through, so I went up to Southampton in October, and by November, I already had my first third of my degree done. And so anyway, I was always interested in paleontology and fossil hunting, things like that, and a collection of fossils. And so I went to Professor Adam and I said, you know, rather than doing this and chemistry all the time, I would like to, would it be all right if I went over to the geology department and listening on the course, not to mind writing or anything like that, but just listening in to learn something. I remember him saying to me, he said, you know, Neville, I've often had students come to me and ask me for less work, but never have I had anybody come to me and ask for more work. Of course you can go over there. So I went over there for a year and listened in and so on. Didn't take any exams, but just as a diversion, you know, to learn a bit more about paleontology. Anyway, so I did very well at university at Southampton, and by 1951, by the way, our original class at Southampton was 22 people in the chemistry class. By the time, 3 years later, we set the University of London external examination, it was down to 11 people. And so, now, I should backtrack a little bit. During the war, a school had been billeted on us in Bournemouth, called Taunton School, Southampton. And we used to go to school, like for example, Bournemouth School would take lectures in the morning and games and labs in the afternoon. The next week, it would be the reverse, because then that would be Taunton School term. So, and about half of my time at school was spent under the playground in the bicycle shed because of the air raid. And that was very, very difficult. And so we had more scholarships at the end of that war period than we ever had in the whole history of the schools, by the way, started in 1901. Because in those days, people didn't play around. They were deadly earnest to get ahead. And when I see the high school kids nowadays, they look like they just pull off a boxcar. But we used to have our uniforms, our blazers, our caps, and we were gentlemen. Anyway. And most of my friends in the sixth form, of course, were a little younger than me. And just by a month or two, but you see, the cutoff was, I should back up, really. When I first went to school, elementary school, if you were born up to September 30th, you could go. But if you were born after September 30th, you had to wait until next year, October 15th. So I was always the oldest one in the class, or next to the oldest. And so I naturally was, you know, a little bit, I was behind in the schedule, and yet I was ahead in the, as far as age was concerned. So anyway, coming back to the war, I'd befriended several of the boys at Taunton School, and we used to come out of the house and do our chemistry experiments on Sunday afternoon. One of those boys was Kenneth Edward Hayes, a rather nice fellow, but, you know, I didn't really know him that well. But anyway, he'd gone on to Southampton. He was younger than me by about 2 years. He'd gone on to Southampton. He went on to get his degree at Southampton. And Professor Dean at the University of Oregon, Robert B. Dean, had asked Professor Adam, who, by the way, is one of the great surface chemists in the 20th century, if he had would like to send over a student who was interested in getting a PhD in physical chemistry at the University of Oregon. So he sent Kenneth Hayes. So there was a very weak link between Adam, myself, and Hayes, just by virtue of my having been nice enough to have him into my little lab in the 1943-44 period. I mean, who would have predicted such a thing? Just quite by chance. But anyway, so around about May of 1951, Dean wrote a letter to Adam and said, look, Hayes is doing so well, do you have another student who you could send over? So he came in and he said, now who would like to go? Adam said, who would like to go to America? Six hands shot up, mine included. And so Adam was not going to play favorites, and so he said, well, all right, it all depends on how well you do in your degree examination. Well, I thought, boy, I'm great in organic chemistry, I'm pretty good at physical chemistry, not bad at math, well, it's up to me. Well, by then I had it to up to my eyebrows with socialism, because in those days, we still had rationing in 1951, the rest of Europe, you could get hams, butter, cheese, anything, but good old socialist Britain couldn't get anything. Nothing ran on time. The socialists were messing up the economy. My father went down to stand in line at the town hall for 2 hours. When he got to the desk, he was handed a form to apply for another form. I mean, this is socialism. And I thought, I absolutely detest all forms of left-wing anything. It doesn't. I'm very much a right-wing Republican. I'm not a lunatic fringe, but I detest socialism simply because it doesn't work. It just plain doesn't work. I know. I've had friends at the University of Oregon that came from communist countries. One came from Estonia. And he said, it's actually a nightmare. And when I went to, later on, I went to Ljubljana in Slovenia. Same thing, nothing worked. These Germans, the same way, I mean, you know, just let the government do it. It was absolutely hopeless. So, that's another story. So, in 1951, as I say, I got my degree with honors in chemistry. And I patiently waited and I said, well, you know, I wonder who the winner is. So it turned out to be me. So that was in, I was told that I got a degree in late July. And by God, I was on the ship by August of the 24th. And I could have come on the Queen Mary, but I was so anxious to get out of Socialist Britain, I traveled across the ocean on the SS Washington, which I later learned was an old converted cruise ship on its way to the scrapyard. And we hit a very, very severe storm in mid-Atlantic. And I was told after we were having boat drill, by the way, boat drill within sight of the Statue of Liberty, they just didn't care, you know. And I was told at the time two plates on the side of the ship had sprung. And I noticed there was a very slight list to the ship, but I didn't take much notice of it. But it was not quite level, you know. It's like that. So anyway, so I came over here, and I missed my train due to not quite understanding the New York people, and they didn't have any time for me. I arrived at Grand Central Station, and I missed my train. And some reason I said, where's the train for Chicago? And he said, 11 standard, 11 standard, move on. I said, what do you mean, standard? All I could think of was a standard roastery. And I thought, so I went again. This is, by the way, I arrived in Russia about between 6 and 7. And I believe it was on a Friday, but it wasn't the best time to hit New York. And so I went to another one. I always remember when I see pictures of that little kiosk, you know, in the middle of Grand Central Station, I always think of the horror of that. And so I went to another place, and he said, 11 standard, move on. So I asked a red cap, and he said, 11 standard. I believe 2 minutes, 11, what's standard about it? See, in England in those days, we had summertime, double summertime, and ordinary time. The term standard meant nothing to me. And nobody would stop and explain that. So I was getting awfully hungry, so, oh, by the way, my dear socialist, I mustn't forget to tell you this, it's worth recording for posterity. You were not allowed to take more than £20, $56, out of the Socialist Britain at that time. And a pain of having the head cut off or something, but it was just awful. Can you imagine traveling 6,000 miles with $56? That's what I had to do. So, of course, I bought a few things on the boat, you know, a little brooch for my mother and things like that, but, you know, I was down to perhaps $38, something like that. So, anyway, I managed to get this slow train. I remember when it was finally explained to me, oh, that's your train, but by then the gates had closed. And I said, that's my train. He said, no, can't do it, it's too late. And I watched it go out of the station. I said, oh, how nice. Previously, I was so hungry, I went over there to the little eatery there at Grand Central. And I said, I'd like to have a sandwich, please. So he said, what do you want? Why do you want? And I said, well, how much is a turkey sandwich? He said, oh, toiki. I'd never heard of toiki before, but anyway, there it was, toiki. And he did something which I'd never seen in England. He took just one piece of bread, he cut it diagonally, and painted the butter with a brush. I'd never seen it painted. Usually they spread it with a knife. I thought, isn't this interesting? So I got some of this old dried up turkey. And that was my meal, my introduction to New York. And I was beginning to think, I better not have anything else. So I ordered a glass of water. So that was my meal for the day. One slice of bread and toiki. Anyway, but they were very impolite in New York. And oh, another thing I should tell you. Are we still okay?